Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun. From elite runners to weekend warriors, find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
You can't put a date on anything. As long as you don't quit, you'll get it at one point. And like everything I try, like I don't try to kick up and like do a backflip every day, but I always try something, and I'm always like thinking there's gonna be this next little step, and I'm not trying to get up and run tomorrow, but I'm definitely trying to do something I wasn't doing yesterday, and I think it'll lead to something one day.
On this episode of The Rundown, I spoke with pro wakeboarder Ben LeClaire. He always had an interest in extreme sports, but truly found his passion on the water. Determined to improve, he quickly found himself climbing the ranks and competing at the highest level. But one day, an accident took that all away, paralyzing him from the neck down. 2 years later, he sits in a wheelchair, but has regained mobility in both arms. Ben has stayed positive since day one, and definitely has the mindset to defy the odds and prove everyone wrong. Are you already subscribed to The Rundown, running with WRG, and still can't get enough? Sign up to their weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the community, hear about exclusive run events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Just go to iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. In this week's news, I'd like to let you know about a couple of cool events coming up the first week of May. On Wednesday, May 1st, Run to Beer is back. This was a project I worked on last year with episode 1 guest, Pierre-Alexandre Cardinal. We're so excited to get an earlier start this season and bring you more meaningful talks with inspirational people from our community. As always, we'll be running from Microbrasserie Quatre Origines at 7 p.m. It's a fun run with something for everyone. You can do a 5, 7, or 10K run before we come back for a cold beverage and a chat with our guest speaker. Join us and bring a friend. I hope to see you there. On Sunday, May 5th at 7 a.m., it's the Wings for Life World Run, a race where 100% of your registration fee goes towards spinal cord research. This is an event that our next guest is very passionate about, since he was affected by a spinal cord injury just 2 years ago. Join me and thousands of runners from around the world for this unique event. Make sure to check the show notes for links and more information. That's all for now. Gotta run. Most of the interviews we have on The Rundown are stories of runners and triathletes, but my next guest is a little bit unique and different in that he was a pro wakeboarder. So welcome to the show, Ben LeClaire.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming in today. Ben, I just want to ask you to kick it off. What was your childhood like? Were you athletic as a kid?
Well, it's hard to say if I was athletic as a kid. I don't know what that really means, but yeah, I think so. I started playing hockey when I was 4. Because all my neighbors were older and they started when they were 5. Mm-hmm. So early on, I was always just trying to follow all what my friends were doing. And that's all we did was play hockey in the streets. So that's kind of where it started.
Like street hockey after mm-hmm. school kind of thing?
Yeah, street hockey and a lot of biking.
Okay, nice. And did that evolve into anything, like into an interest of any kind growing up? Or did that lead to like organized sports?
Yeah, I played hockey for 12 years. So
nice. Or,
yeah, maybe 11 years, but yeah, I think hockey has been a big part of my childhood. I learned so much just playing with others, and I think once you learn sports, it's better to learn in a team when you start, because I feel like you're not putting any pressure on yourself, and as when you're really young, I think that's a good way to start.
Exactly.
And then it evolved into I started skiing a lot when I was younger, and then we moved houses, and my neighbor, I don't know why I've had so many neighbors inspiring me into sports when I was a kid, but then my neighbor was a professional motocross racer.
Okay.
So I was really into motocross, and then I started racing when I was 10. So from 10 to 12, I got really into motocross racing, and then completely quit that because my neighbor quit, and then started wakeboarding and skateboarding much more. because it was just more accessible and way less expensive also. And then got into wakeboarding because my neighbor was wakeboarding and he became a national champion. So I was kind of like following a right path.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, so who's your neighbor?
Didier Godbout.
Okay.
It's a weird name to say in English. But yeah, he was a great influence in my sports career.
Cool. So at what age was that when you started getting into the wakeboarding and stuff?
I was probably 12. I started wakeboarding with him. And we just started behind a jet ski in front of our house. And him and his brother built a jump because they wanted to jump their jet skis. Because their mother gave him an old jet ski and they wanted to jump that thing. And we figured out it wouldn't work and it was going to break if we tried, because a jet ski is really heavy. But they started hitting it with wakeboards, and that's where I saw wakeboarding was. And then my goal was to be able to be up on a wakeboard to then hit the jump that they built. So like the first week, I was pretty lucky. Like a lot of people, when they start wakeboarding, they have a little bit of trouble understanding how to get up behind the boat, like not to pull against the boat and just kind of just flow with it. And I got up first try, but I wouldn't want to fall. That was my big problem when I was a kid. I wanted to get everything first try. And then once you get it, you don't want to try more because you know that you've got this on like dialed already. So I remember I wouldn't try anything else. I was just up and I was like, this was the goal. I'm up. I'm not even going to turn. Like they'd tell me, oh, do this, do that, try this. No, I'm up. Like this is what I'm doing. And I was happy with what I had. And then in the same week, I started hitting those jumps. And it just went pretty quick from there. Like I didn't have a wakeboard boat or anything. We just rode behind jet skis and built little things. We built rails. Like we'd post down rails in the wintertime. We'd do holes in the ice with a chainsaw, and then we'd post them down and align them like a 80-foot long rail.
Wow.
And we'd set it all up and hopefully it'd be ready for the summer and it'd be perfect like we thought. And I started hitting that with them on a jet ski.
Very cool.
Yeah. So they would hit these big rails and I was way too small. I couldn't, like they wouldn't build things for kids, obviously. So I couldn't hit what they were building. And one time they built this tiny rail just for me to try, because they knew I could probably do the big things, but they didn't want me to like miss it the first time and then hate it forever. So I tried the smaller rail, and then the next week I was hitting the big rail with everyone.
So it was a huge win for you
as a
kid. And it was all just for fun. Were you competing at that time?
No, it was all just because it felt really good.
Yeah. Just get on the lake, play with the older kids and
yeah.
And kind of follow their, and I was going to say footsteps, but I don't know what that translation would be on the lake, you know?
Yeah, I think we didn't, that's what it was so fun that we didn't have a goal. It was just because it felt so good to do it. And it was such like, we were super lucky to live by a lake, and we had this little bay that was kind of closed off, and the boats really didn't come there because it wasn't really deep. So it was perfect. Like we could post down our things. We could like hang out in the water, and that was just, I don't know. We had nothing else better than that.
It kept you out of trouble too, I'm
yeah.
sure.
Mm-hmm.
So when did you start competing? When did you realize that was a possibility?
Well, when I was riding these rails, there's it's kind of strange. Where I'm from in Valleyfield, maybe three or four of the best wakeboarders in the world come from there.
Wow.
Yep. Because there's two brothers, the Romes. They have a private lake that their dad built maybe 15 minutes away from where I was. And they dug out a second lake and had a cable installed in there. It's an electric cable that does it's kind of like a ski lift, same pattern. And he wanted to build his own when that thing was kind of, it wasn't really popular, which is still not popular in Canada, but it's really big in Europe. And he built his own cable, and he needed people to try it out. And I was already wakeboarding as much as I could and jumping on the trampoline all day long, trying to figure out what I was going to learn. And it was hard to learn stuff because we couldn't really jump and I didn't have a boat to ride behind. So it was like a perfect timing. That's maybe the next season that I started, their cable park wasn't open to public, but they wanted riders to come out and ride with them and test the cable and see like, do all the tests. So I just got there, met the guys, and they would just make me ride for free. And what they wanted was people to test the cable. So I would go there every day, all day. And that's really what got me into wakeboarding so much. And then I started working for them. And I started giving wakeboard classes out there. And
wow.
Yeah. I was really at the right place at the right moment, because they had the sponsors. They had all the things that really is hard to get into any sport, like having the right path. And like I was there with my old wakeboard that I had all the time that was just broken down, and they would have sponsors that would come in and like show them new boards, and I would just like be the kid in the back, like, all right, this is all the new stuff, like, can I try it too? And like I would try the boards and the bindings, and they would think that I was trying them because I wanted to try the new gears, because actually my stuff was all broken down, because I would tear it, like I would tear through them so fast because I would do it so much.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was really lucky because one of the companies that came in to try to get one of the brothers onto their team, which actually turned out that he never got on. He didn't accept the deal, but I was there, and the team manager was like, who's this random kid? Like, let's send him a contract and see if he wants to get on the team. And I was just like, is that a joke? And that Christmas, I got a contract in the mail, and they were like, you want to come to Florida? This is it. Like, we're going to send you boards, and let's see if you can do events. And that's where it started.
Well, that's amazing. That's mm-hmm. really cool. So that kind of opened up that window to a new, like, winter. First of all, I was going to ask you, how do you train in the winter?
You don't.
Yeah. You have to go to someplace like Florida
mm-hmm.
to kind of grow and progress your skills, and I'm sure learn from some other amazing athletes too, right?
Well, that's what I was super lucky, is that I thought the level of wakeboarding was that high everywhere in the world, but it was just that I had those two brothers that were some of the best in the world, and that's all I saw. Like, I had my neighbor and I had them, and I thought that was normal. So I would just, like, I don't know, I would learn off of what they were doing. And then once I got into, like, in more international events, I went to Florida and I was like, damn, okay, these are, like, I thought these were just my two friends, but actually they're known everywhere they go. They sign all the boards, and like they were the deal, you know,
like doing autographs and mm-hmm. you saw that they were like famous really mm-hmm. in that sport.
Yeah. So. Which is crazy, because you go around here and nobody knows what wakeboarding is, and nobody knows them. But anywhere you go out in Europe or just in Florida is like the mecca of wakeboarding at that time. And those were like, they were starting to have pro models, and everybody would ride their boards. And it's really surprising when you're from a small city and you think that nobody knows anything about it.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, mm-hmm. you can say the same about, I guess, some of these hockey players come from these small towns and stuff like that too, where nobody's ever heard of this place, but they kind of put it on the map, you know?
Yeah.
It's like Valleyfield, Quebec is now renowned for the best wakeboarders in the world, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Now, watching them, did that change your view of wakeboarding and what you wanted to do with it? Or was it just like, hey, this is really cool and really fun, and I could keep doing this, or I could now see myself reaching another level?
Well, I think I kind of didn't really know what I was getting into. I just did it because it was fun. But then I always saw like the work ethic of professional athletes. Like, I would see them train and I would see them stretch and do all the things that you have to do to be efficient and be good on the long term. Which I think if I would have learned it by myself, I would have made way more errors. So it kind of helped me just follow the right path, maybe a little bit quicker.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. And then where did it go for you? Like, how did your career, where did you get to in your career?
Well, like I said, it went pretty fast. Like, it started pretty slow. Like, when I started doing smaller events, like, they really took me under their wing also by telling me, like, don't try to go do all these contests and don't try to throw yourself out there and be like, hey, I want to get sponsored, and just like, do your thing, do what you like. And that's kind of what I did. And then I started doing, I think the first competition I did was a provincial cable contest, which was held at their place. So it was like my home cable. I knew everything. Like, I knew how the setup was working, and it was all I knew at the same time. And I thought I would just like be in my age category and do that and see how how a contest is, because before that, all I knew was hockey tournaments and motocross races. So it was really different. And I was really lucky just that day, got into like my category, and then they pushed me up into open, which is like anybody, or you're against the pros. And I went up the rankings, like did up to the finals, and I finished fifth or sixth, I think, which was really crazy for me because it was my first event. And then to just be in the finals with all the pros and all the guys that I was like thinking I was out of the league, kind of out of their league. And then once I saw, all right, well, what I'm doing is kind of just as good as those guys, it opened my horizons a little bit. And I was like, damn, I want to start making videos too. And I want to start making photos and like doing all this deal that looks so fun that I was kind of holding back before, because I was thinking, damn, I can't be like doing what they're doing because I haven't been doing this for that long. But then it started really quick. Once it started, it was like, all right, you're in a magazine. The next thing you know, you're in 10 magazines, and then you're on TV, and it's like, boom, 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 boom. Like 2 years later, I was the rookie of the year in Florida, and then like getting nominated for rider of the year, which was really like, I never thought I'd be there ever.
and it was, you think it was like probably a combination of the passion for the sport and also like your work ethic, because it sounds like you worked pretty hard at it, but not because it was like a job, but because you just were having so much fun.
Yeah, I think that's, you get better at something when you're just thinking about it all the time, and you just see it as what you like it the most. And like I would wait, like every morning I'd wait to take the bus, and I had my trampoline on the side of where I'd take the bus at two places when I was going to school. Mm-hmm. And once was in the backyard of my neighbor. So I'd jump on his trampoline every morning, every night before taking the bus with a rope tied to the tree. And I would just imagine, all right, like this is how I've got to do this and that. And what was pretty crazy is that he was like working to become a national champion at that time. And I would see him, what he was practicing. And I wouldn't practice it in front of him because I didn't want him to see me. But I would practice what he would, like he'd be trying his actual run that he'd be doing behind a boat, like try exact same tricks with the grabs. And I remember I would be like, all right, I'm going to try these. And I would try it on the trampoline and know that I'd never be doing this on a wakeboard, because when I'd take my board out, like it would look nothing like what he'd be doing. But on the trampoline, I'd always try like, all right, I'm going to practice my run. In my head, my run was what his run was actually going to be that year in the contest. But like 5 years later, I was doing the exact same thing on my board, just because I've done it a million times on the trampoline, mm-hmm. probably.
And is that the best place to practice your moves and stuff like that, on a trampoline?
For me, I think it was, because it's really easier to visualize. Like, and then it's a confidence boost also. Like once you think you can do it, you're going to get it much easier. If like you think, oh, I've never done it, but I've been close to doing the same type of move on the trampoline. Like I've done this flip, even if I'm missing like a 360 in there, I kind of know the basic of like how to throw it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then once you do it 100 times, once you try it on the water, chances are it'll be much easier.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So how long did you do that for? Like what age were you at your peak, let's say?
Well, I think I was at my peak right before my accident. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to say.
Yeah.
Like before that, I was probably practicing. It took me maybe like 5 years to get to my peak from doing it full time.
Okay. And then if we can talk about, you know, kind of what happened to you and you good?
Yeah.
Just like what happened to you and I guess reading up on you a little bit, just there was a practice run that you were doing. And maybe you can explain kind of.
Yeah, so I was in Florida. It was like, it's been maybe 2 years before my accident that I was talking with that guy that was a well-known wakeboarder named Kevin Henshaw. And he had his private lake in Florida. Like everybody wanted to go to that place, but it was just like, it's called Area 52. And in the world of wakeboarding, there's like this iconic place where everybody wants to go, but nobody knows where it is, you know? And I've always talked to him about maybe we should start, like we should do a video, like me and him. Because I was starting to get into video production and I started making my own videos and I was getting better and better at producing. So I trying to convince him, like, slowly, like, hey, next year, maybe we should do this. And it was always like, yeah, well, it was a good idea, but we'll see, like, if everything can get aligned between contests. And everybody had so many things going on. And it kind of just never worked out. And then I went to Surf Expo in Florida. And it was in September. And then he just told me, hey, why don't you just take a plane, like, back in a week or two, and let's finally do this. So we talked with wakeboard companies, and we said, let's, like, pull a budget and build new things and, like, try to make this video finally happen at that cable. So I went there and was there for maybe 2 weeks. We started, like, ripping off everything that was there, because it's two lakes with two different levels. So with, like, a big wooden stair set between. And we build all of our stuff on there. And we filmed for, like, maybe 5 or 6 days right before I was taking my plane to come back. And we had a photographer that morning. We took all the photos we needed. Everything was done. And I just went back, and the ramp that I was using to jump from the bottom lake to the bigger, the highest lake, I guess, the ramp broke and the plastic kind of lifted and my board got stuck in there. So instead of going 30 feet high and 50 feet long, I went maybe 5 or 6 feet high. So I was just barely didn't make it over the stairs, and I kind of flipped forward. So I was, like, flying upside down, and my head hit the last stair. Hmm. But luckily I had a helmet, which probably saved my life.
And was that protocol? Did you normally wear a helmet when you were doing these kind of things, or?
I should say I was, but no, it was really, like, I was really lucky that I put my helmet on that morning, because we were shooting a photo from a bottom angle of the, it was a jump with a fence that I was going on top of, and we couldn't see the logos off my board. And I knew that to get paid with my photos, we needed to see the logos from the companies I was writing for. And I knew that if I put my helmet on, we would see the stickers on the helmet that we didn't see on this angle. So that's the only reason I put my helmet on. And that's what saved me.
That's insane.
Yeah.
It's funny when you look back on certain things, why you do certain things. And it's...
Because a lot of people were like, damn, you're so intelligent that you were wearing a helmet. I'm like, oh, no, it was so much luck.
Right. Yeah, but there's a reason, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason for that.
Everything happens.
So, like... Yeah, I read one of your posts on Instagram and saying, like, kind of how you woke up after the incident, like, that happened, you know? And so what were your, like, I guess, immediate feelings just after? I guess it was pretty serious.
Yeah, it's probably the most serious I've ever felt.
Yeah.
It's just waking up. It's kind of weird. It feels like I lost a couple days. Like, I think I was out for maybe a day. And I just woke up, I had the tube in my mouth, and I was breathing by a ventilator because I couldn't breathe, and I couldn't move anything. I was just on my back and looking at the ceiling, and I was kind of lucky because I don't remember all of, like, the before, when, like, getting in the hospital, or when the accident happened. They flew me with a helicopter because I couldn't breathe anymore, and kind of just woke up, and my family was there. So, like, I didn't know what happened, because I was like, what are you guys doing in Florida for once? And why can't I talk? But at the same time, like, you're on so many meds that it's just really, really hard to understand. And then even at this short, like, on a short notice, the doctors are already trying to, like, fill you in and tell you, like, all right, we don't want to stress you too much, but you're never going to move again. And you're like, really? Like, no. And I think that's what helped me a lot, is that I kind of just said, like, who are you? Like, I'm not sure how I got here, and I'm not going to let you guys tell me how this is going to end up. And at the same time, like, it was so overwhelming that I couldn't really believe what was happening. So I was just like, all right, let's take this day by day. And you're saying the next step is starting to try to breathe. Like, let's start trying to do that. And I was in Florida in the hospital for almost 2 weeks. And then as soon as I could start breathing a little bit on my own, then they told me I was safe enough to take the plane. And that's how I came back to Montreal.
Okay. So, and so you remember kind of everything leading up to the accident, and then you woke up 2 days later, kind of thing. And that's where things kind of I can't imagine waking up in that kind of situation where you were doing one thing super active before and then something so limiting, like just like fighting for your life basically, you know?
Well, there's a little thing that I remember from like the whole impact. I don't really remember that because it happened really, really quick. And like I didn't even have time to, because everything's filmed and I've seen the shot also like 6 months later. And I don't even have time to put my hands up or anything. It just like, boom, it happens really fast. And I woke up, and which it's really weird because it happened to me like 2 years before. I hit my head really bad on another rail and I hit my neck really hard also. And as soon as I was hurt, like I couldn't breathe. And my first reaction was like, all right, everybody just leave me alone. I just want to stand up and like kind of do the own checkup of myself. Like, all right, it's not too bad. And it was the same with that accident. Like I woke up, I was just laying in the, I don't know how to say it in English.
Like the hospital chair?
No. Right after the accident, like right after I hit the stairs.
Okay.
I woke up for like a couple minutes in the yellow thing that you're on your
back.
Yeah,
like it's like that yellow...
stretcher?
Yeah, the stretcher, yeah.
Yeah, I was on the stretcher. And I had trouble breathing, and they told me, all right, try to move your toes and try to move your hands. And I did. And I was just like, I kept like begging them, like, can you just let me stand up? And everybody's like, no, don't move. And I was like, I just want to stand. And they tell me something, and I was like, okay, just let me stand up now. And then they would be like, no, you can't do this. And I think I probably passed out at that moment. And somebody explained me that maybe 20 minutes later, they asked me again, hey, move your fingers, just try to move something. And then I couldn't move anything. And then I had a lot of trouble breathing. So that's when they called the helicopter and they brought me to the hospital. And then I don't remember anything.
Just waking up and...
Yeah.
But that mentality that you had waking when you woke up, you're like, don't tell me I can't, you know, I want to try and get better. Like, was that something that happened immediately? Was that immediately your mindset? Kind of coming out of it, or were you like, oh God, like what am I going to do? You know, like, I just wonder, like, I don't know what it's like to go through something like that, but I can imagine feeling like helpless almost, you know, but you seem like you have such like a positive mindset towards it almost like right after it kind of occurred, you know?
Well, I think I was pretty positive, but I didn't know exactly what I was getting myself into. And I was thinking, like, usually when I try to do something, I try it until I get it. Like, that's why I've skateboarded so much in my life, because you can try it 1,000 times and it won't work, but you're always a little bit closer and a little bit closer. And it was the same type of deal. Like, I was there and I was asking, like, I couldn't talk, but I could move my lips and they would read off of what I was trying to say. Which was really complicated because I had some, like, my family was there and I speak French with my family, and all of my friends from Florida were there. So like they would never know if I was trying to speak English or French, and they had to read off my lips. So that was the hardest part. Like, I was trying to communicate and say, like, can you guys tell me what's actually going on? Like, I couldn't even ask him, like, what did I break? Like, what's the problem? Is it my neck? Is it like my back? Like, I had no idea. And since I couldn't really understand what they were telling me, I kind of just focused on myself and was like, okay, if I can't breathe, like, why can't I breathe? What's the process? So I would be there all day just in my bed and I couldn't move. So I would just think, all right, so if the air goes in by here, probably goes there after. So I was just thinking the process and then redoing it and redoing it. And then a couple of days later, they told me, okay, well, it looks like you can't breathe on your own, but we can start like, I guess, turning the machine down a little bit so you can start getting help from the machine instead of having total assistance by the machine. And then I had a lot of help from my sister because she was there and like reading a lot of things online right beside me. And she would tell me like, hey, look at this guy. He's walked. Like, some people get off of it. And they got told it wasn't going to happen. So right off the bat, I was like, okay, these people are going to tell me it's not going to happen. So I'm just going to say, yeah, okay. And beyond, like, in the back of my head, I would know I don't know even at this day if I'm going to be up. Like, nobody can tell, but definitely I'm not going to let anybody tell me that it's not going to happen.
Right.
And I've had the same mindset from the beginning, and I think that's what helped me. Maybe a little bit of a mix of, I don't like people telling me what to do,
yeah,
which kind of helped me. But
do you think some of those similar characteristics that helped you become a pro wakeboarder are helping you in your recovery today?
I think so. Maybe being hard-headed, probably. Just I think what helped me a lot with wakeboarding was that I would analyze what I was doing a lot. Like, I would I would drive the cable, so I would look at people ride all the time. And I was lucky that it was good riders, so I would look at how they do things and analyze every little piece of, like, the way you jump and how do you jump higher and, like, how do you land without getting hurt. And I would just look at all the little details. And now with my injury, that's exactly what you have to do. You have to look at every little movement and how does this work? Mm-hmm. And why does this work? And how does it, like, it's, oh wait, no, my hand is doing a spasm. Sorry.
It's okay.
Well, should I just start this over?
No, that's fine. No? Yeah, it's okay.
Well,
so how things work in your body and, like, why they function a certain way and to kind of get some ability back, right?
Yeah, well, with the sport before, I would just have somebody film me, and then I would look it over and over again, and it kind of makes you understand, all right, I thought that's how it looked, or I thought that's how it was in my head, but actually that's not how it looks in real life. And then it's kind of the same thing with the accident. Like, they tell you, all right, move your arm this way, and they tell you, oh no, it's not working. But in my head, I was like, maybe my arm's not lifting up in the air right now, but I can feel something. Like, I can feel something that it's not making my arm get up, but there's something going through my arm. So, like, if it starts from there, it'll go through getting up one day, you know? Because
mm-hmm.
you're not going to get up and do a kickflip on your skateboard on the first day, but you're going to let the board flip in front of you. So, like, if there's a little step, there'll be the leap one day. So that's kind of what I was looking at. Like, my arm, when I woke up, like, maybe the first week, I could move a little bit of my arm, just like a twitch kind of. And I would feel inside me like, damn, if I can twitch, it's gotta bring you somewhere, right? But then the doctors would tell you, oh, no, it's not, because, like, a lot of people, they'll have this and that's how it's going to stay. And I couldn't pass over that. I was like, there's no way. Like, really? If those people didn't get better, it's just because you brainwashed them that they're not going to get better. And I've had kind of this mentality the whole way. And
so this now happened, like, 2 years ago when you were 23?
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So how far have you come in 2 years? And have you surpassed those expectations that doctors have set for you, or surpassed your own expectations already?
I think my expectations change every week. But yeah, definitely, I think I've passed. Well, I was on a ventilator and I couldn't move my arms. I couldn't lift anything. I couldn't scratch my face with this is my right arm. This is my good arm. And they told me, oh, chances are you're never going to be able to lift it up high enough to scratch your face. And now I can lift up 40 pounds with my arm. So that's like it's not all of what I've been working on, but from where I started, maybe I had like two or three muscles working, which was like my neck muscles and my traps and nothing in my shoulder, but only my bicep. And now I've got 2 years later, I've got my left arm that was totally paralyzed. I couldn't feel it at all. Like, they would turn me in the bed, because they had to, on when you're in bed rest, they have to turn you every 4 hours. And they would turn you on your back and then on your side and then on your other side. And once they turned me on my left side, I couldn't even feel that I was on a bed, because I didn't feel my left shoulder or left arm at all. And it took me like 6 months to start feeling something in my arm, like actual, like, touch somewhere. Mm. And now to this day, I can lift up almost 20 pounds with my left arm. So
that's huge.
Can scratch my face all day.
Gotta send videos to those doctors they told you.
Well, they all, like, even now, like, they were telling me that I'd never push a manual wheelchair, And recently, I went into my doctor's office pushing myself with the chair. And I don't know, that felt pretty good.
Yeah, no kidding. It's like a huge, it's a huge win, for sure. And I'm sure it's like really inspiring for like, just like you were probably inspired by people that were told they could never walk again or never do this or never do that. Like they probably inspired you too, but you're probably inspiring other people as well. Like just with your story and the recovery that you made so far, you know, do you get people like approaching you? Do you do a lot of conversations or talks with people now or?
I'm just starting to get into doing conferences and stuff like that. But I've had many people write me online, like, hey, my brother just got an accident. And I've been trying to help those people a lot because I see all the impact it takes on the rest of your family. Like, everybody around. It's not only when, like, I didn't know what I was getting into, but all the rest of my family around, you see, like, they get even more affected by this whole situation. So when anybody, like, I'm not saying this because I want people to send me messages, but if anybody has, like, any questions about that spinal cord injuries and like, hey, what happens in the first week? Like, I remember some things that help us a lot, some random stuff that you'd never think, like, hey, all the people that are going to come see him in this room, like, watch out that they don't have too much perfume because he can't, like, he's not going to be able to tell you because he can't talk yet. But those are the type of things. And when you're, it's like all your senses are all like tweaked and a little bit weird when it first happens. Well, even today, they're kind of weird, but, smells and heat and cold is really, really strange at first. So like people would walk in and they'd have a bunch of perfume on. It like gets you in your nose and you're like, oh my God. And you can't even put your hand to your nose. So you're just there kind of suffering, but you don't want to tell them. So it's all these little tips that helped me because there was another guy called Brad Smealy that had an accident wakeboarding that broke his neck like 3 or 4 years before me. And he got in, like, my sister contacted him and he gave them a bunch of tips, like, from the first week on to, like, the first 6 months, like, hey, try to aim for this or that or this. Because there's so many ways, like, there's so many ways to start rehabbing. And, like, maybe after 10 days in my bed at the hospital, we started, like, trying to do workouts and, like, you got to start moving. If you don't use it, you lose it. So my dad would just, like, stretch my arms and, like, even if my left arm, I wouldn't feel it at all. We'd do like bicep curls and be like, try to contract whatever you can. And we did that for like 6 months until I started feeling something in my arm. Just like I would feel a heartbeat in my muscle and nobody else would. And then we'd ask, oh, maybe the doctors are going to know better than we do. And then they would tell us, no, there's absolutely nothing. And it's kind of weird because they tell you like if it doesn't happen in the first 6 months, then it won't happen. And then once you get to that 6 months, they tell you, before the first year, you can still have something. And then you get to that first year and you're like all bummed out, like, damn, it didn't work. But then another doctor will be like, oh, no, first 2 years. And then you get to the second year mark and I talk to doctors today and they're like, oh, no, if you continue working, it's like anything. It's not because it's a different injury. Anybody will continue trying, you'll continue getting better. And it doesn't mean like for sure you'll get better faster. It's like when you're a kid, when you learn, when you're 5, you're going to learn way faster. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that you're 50, that you're not going to continue learning, you know? So that's kind of the same mindset I'm trying to have now. And I'm still like, people tell me, oh, it's crazy. Like usually people don't get so many gains that far after their accident. I feel like the more I train, the stronger I get, the more workouts I can do. And now that I can train much more, I'm getting much better. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It's just a wheel that keeps on going. And I don't think I'm ready. I'm ready to stop until I'm going to be up.
Yeah, that's it. And what's the biggest accomplishment you've had to date? And that could be anything.
I think eating soup, probably.
Okay.
Just because it was the biggest struggle was because I could lift my arm. But when I lifted my arm at first, I couldn't control any of my trunk. So when I'd lift my arm, it would get me off balance and I'd fall head first on the table.
That's crazy.
So like being able to lift up something that's got food in and not fall, and just this whole pattern of eating without spilling it everywhere, because that took me like a year to just eat not normally, but almost. And now I can lift up a normal spoon. It works just fine, I think. Mm-hmm. It's hard to pinpoint like what's an exact accomplishment since there's so many small things. Like at first, brushing my teeth was the hardest thing. And now it's almost normal, but still, like, my next big step, which is really stupid for a lot of people, is being able to push my manual chair over the step of my house so I can roll from inside to outside. And a year ago, it was going from the living room to the bathroom because there's like this half an inch step and I couldn't get the speed to pass that step. And today I can do it super easy. I can do it backwards. I can do it 100 times. Mm. But it's those little things that, like, maybe I've got a competitive mind, but like every day I'm looking at things with my chair and I'm like, okay, today I'm going to do this. And then if I can't do it, like, I'll do it 150 times. And if it still doesn't work, I'm not going to get bummed about it. I'm just going to think, who knows, next week maybe, or maybe in 3 weeks. And that's what's kind of, this whole injury has learned me, that you can't put a date on anything. But as long as you don't try stopping, or as long as you don't quit, you'll get it at one point. Mm. And everything I try, like, I don't try to kick up and like do a backflip every day, but I always try something. And I'm always like thinking there's going to be this next little step, and I'm not trying to get up and run tomorrow, but I'm definitely trying to do something I wasn't doing yesterday. Mm. And I think it'll lead to something one day.
Yeah, hopefully. That's what we're all hoping for sure. Mm-hmm. I think that's a cool parallel that like we face in, like I face in running, or with like people starting out, or anybody starting to do any activity for that matter, like just to be patient with the process. And like sometimes, like listening to you talk now, like there's certain things that we just take for granted too. And just like building a solid base to be able to do the next thing. But like, don't run before you could walk, or don't walk before you can crawl, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And just like use that. That's a great like lesson, I think, just in general. Like, we're always rushing to get to the next thing, but sometimes like you got to take all the steps to get to where you want to go, to achieve something bigger than yourself, kind of thing. But yeah, I was gonna ask what's something that you would, like a piece of advice you would give somebody who's facing a challenge like yours.
Well, it's kind of weird to say, but sometimes I think about my whole accident, and I don't know how it's going to finish, but I think it's going to finish well, and I'll be back to what I was, and well, I'll never be the person I was before because it's changed me so much. But I wish this would have happened to me when I was 2 years old, and then I would have learned all of this, because I've getting so many lessons of like how we're saying you're going to have to walk before you run. Right now, I'm relearning exactly everything and trying to be patient and not to make too many expectations. And I feel like I'm learning the right way now. Like, everything takes time, and you just have to do it and push through it. And there's going to be bad sides, like more than there's going to be good sides, but they're still all going to end at the same place. And I think some errors that we probably do in our daily lives is, it's going to, like, I know for me before, I've tried things wakeboarding that I should have tried a year later, but I've tried it that week and I was lucky that I got it, but I could have hurt myself, and then it would have taken me 2 more years instead of 1, you know? Like, all these little steps, you have to take the good route, I guess. And I feel like now I'm learning like to like every step of the way, mm-hmm. and just to be grateful in everything that I do. And I think that's what everybody should. Like, if you're gonna tell yourself, I want to run a marathon, like, don't expect it's gonna work next week. But if you're not putting your goals too high, or if you're not, no, not telling not to put your goals too high, but like, if you're not expecting so much, you're gonna have much more fun the whole way you're doing it, instead of putting pressure. Like, I've put a lot of pressure on myself for many things, and it kind of made the whole process not as fun as it should have been. Like, if I would have done it back then how I'll do it now, I would have loved the way, I don't know if it's hard to follow, but
no, that's fine.
I would have loved the process much more, instead of putting so much pressure on myself and like telling myself, damn, if this doesn't happen, oh my God, what's going to happen? Instead of just being like, well, you know what? This just happened. That's how it happened. Mm-hmm. And what's going to be the next step? Like, we'll just try it. And then that's how you just, I think you get much better also, mm-hmm. if you're having much more fun doing what you're trying.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like I ask that question to a lot of people. Like, what would you tell a younger version of yourself? And I think that's a kind of a great way to answer that, you know, just like, just take it day by day and just enjoy the process, enjoy the ride, and mm-hmm. take time to appreciate what you're doing in that moment, you know, because like,
yeah, instead of just like waiting for, oh, I'll be happy once I win. Well, you can be happy the whole way. Like, it's going to be just as fun.
Exactly.
It's going to be way more fun in the long end.
Yeah, that's it. So speaking of fun, I want to talk to you a bit about Wings for Life, and they do a lot of work with for spinal cord research, and this is an event that I've had the pleasure of being a part of even as soon as last year and help organize. But you're involved with them now. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, last year, I had one of my friends who works at Red Bull. He was telling me about this race, and I was in, like, nobody really knew where I was at. Like, when I was in the hospital, like, we didn't really post too much. And it's like, you think you can come to the race? Like, just come and hang out or be in the chair or whatever. And it just wasn't possible. Like, last year, I couldn't be outside for that long, and I couldn't be in a chair for too long because I couldn't hold my body up. And from that point on, I was like, damn, all right, well, there's going to be a next year. And if it's not the next year, it's going to be the other one. But I want to be part of that event since it's getting so much for the spinal cord community. And it's cool to just like get everybody to kind of open their eyes onto something that can happen to everybody. Like, you never know. You can get everybody drives a car and it'll happen really quick, and you'll be stuck in a wheelchair maybe for a couple months, but you'll get the feel of what it is. And I think a lot more people should open their eyes on this situation. Mm-hmm. And it just wasn't possible for me, even if I really wanted to. Like, I had no chance. And as now that I've gotten a bit stronger, like, I didn't want to just go and ride the ride with everybody on my wheelchair, just like drive with the electric chair, even if I probably could take, that would have been like the easy way. But now I started hand biking at the end of the summer last year, because my left arm was just getting strong enough to follow the right arm, and I could start pedaling in a, not a straight line, but almost.
But
and,
pedaling.
Yeah. And then we got pretty lucky. I found a bike that we could control a little bit of the alignment of the bike. So I could start pedaling a little bit straighter, even though it's not cheating, but almost. But you got to cheat a little bit to get better.
There you go. And, assisted. It's assisted cheating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's how you get better. And now I think I'll be good to pedal at least like 5 kilometers outside.
Yeah. I saw that was the goal, right?
Yeah. Well, that's my goal. I don't know.
That's great. No, it's like you say, you got to set those little benchmarks to kind of to get things going. And they've put together like a group of ambassadors. So you're one of 9 across Canada. They have a goal to do the length of Canada, I guess, of 5,550 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody signing up and jumping on board will take part in helping you guys with that mileage. And what do you, like, what makes it so unique for you? Like race wise, like,
well, it's cool. Cause with wakeboarding, I've traveled so much, mm-hmm. and I've got friends all over the world, and a lot of my friends ride for Red Bull, and I've seen it in like their stories last year when I was in the hospital. Like, everybody is, some in Munich, some in Miami, and like everybody runs at the same time, and it feels like everybody's joining this party, but nobody's at the same place. And it's just going to be cool to finally join the party with everyone. Yeah. Also, and not see it on Instagram or social media.
Yeah, because it takes place all over the world and mm-hmm. at the exact same time. So
yeah,
the times
everybody starts
yeah.
at 7.
Exactly. It's all aligned, so everybody in the world kind of is participating at the same time. And in some countries, they have, because the idea is to start and then 30 minutes after, like, a pace car takes off. And in our case, it's a virtual car that tries to catch you. But in some countries, you can see it on TV, like they have an actual car that's chasing people down on the road, which is like, it makes it fun, but it's also like, there's no finish line. Your finish line is when you get caught. So it's it's a really fun fun way to make it accessible for everybody. If you run 2K, or if you ride 5 or whatever you want to do, you kind of have the ability. And all the money or the proceeds go to the spinal cord research, which is helping you and helping so many others to recover and get better and to do what people say they can't do just by pushing yourself kind of every day. So that's going to be on May 5th. And so where are you in your progress? Do you feel like ready? You feel like you still have a little bit ways to go before you can get on?
Well, right now I feel super ready because I haven't pedaled outside, and it's much easier to pedal indoors. And I've gotten like 10 times better than I was when I started. Mm. Like, let's say when I started, I could only bike for 20 minutes, and I don't even think I could make 1 kilometer because I would just do it as slow as you could possibly spin the wheel. And now I can do almost 10 kilometers I think in 55 minutes I've done 10 kilometers, which is like my top score now, but that's in my kitchen. So I haven't done it outside with the wind and with all the other factors, but I think it'll be much more fun definitely to ride outside, and it'll be much more fun than when I've done it right before the winter. It was cool to finally, since my accident, it's the only thing that I can do outdoors, like the only training that's really, really fun and that I can have other people involved. Because I haven't really been a gym type of person all my life. I really like more doing many sports, which would kind of keep me in shape instead of trying to do always this. And I feel like everybody's got a different way of keeping in shape and getting better. But I've never been the gym rat.
Me neither.
So but I'm getting to that now. Like, I've in the past 2 years, all I've done was being in gyms and with physios, and I live in a gym pretty much. Now my house is, I've got gym equipments everywhere in my kitchen, and I've got my bed in the kitchen because I can't get up the stairs. So like, I basically live in a living room, and I have a bathroom and a kitchen, and it looks like a gym.
That's awesome.
So I think it'll be good to do something different. And as soon as it get warm enough, I think I'll be biking a lot more, and I'll be in the way of everybody on the cycle path.
We'll have to go for a ride.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what does it mean to you to be an ambassador for the Wings for Life World Run?
Well, hopefully I can get as much people as I can to follow the event and join. That'd be the best. But if I can also show other people that were in the same situation I was a year or two before, where you look at this race and you're like, damn, I know it's like going to help me, but at what point? Like, I've done a lot of research, and I'm looking a lot into clinical research and all the tests that are done. And I was really surprised to know that with this event, we're like financially one of the biggest donors for some of the biggest clinical trials in the world right now. And it's pretty crazy what we're like. We're really close to finding something to actually cure this. And like, I've always, since the accident, been like, I don't want to be the first guy to become a robot. Like, I don't want to be having all the injections and trying stuff out, because I don't want it to be like, my main goal is to get back, and like, I don't want to get up and just walk. I want to get up and be able to do a trampoline, you know? I want to do something fun. So I think I like the human possibilities of getting back up. There is possibilities, but we're going to need a little bit of help from science. And like, a lot of people bank off of that and like say, oh, I'm not going to do anything and I'll wait for the cure. But that's not going to happen. Like, you got to be active. You got to stay. You got to get as much as you can back, and then you'll be ready when the cure comes. And that's kind of the process that I've been following. Like, I get much better all the time, and I've regained many muscles, and I've regained much of my independence from working out and doing all these therapies. But definitely with stuff like Wings for Life, it's gonna bring that little edge that we're missing, you know? Like, I don't know what it's gonna be exactly, but I think what's really cool is that we're close. Like, I feel like for the past 10 years, people are like, oh, stem cells are coming and this is coming. And like Christopher Reeves was close to moving his legs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But actually now that, I don't know if it's because in the past 2 years I've been in this situation and I read a lot about it, but there's been so many advancements just in the past year. Like, we're in the era that I think it's going to happen.
It can happen, yeah.
So that's why everybody, I know that not many people know about all these clinical trials because it's so many things to read about.
Yeah.
And there's so many things happening in the world and it's not the only problem, but we're actually like, we're almost there.
Yeah.
So if we have so much more people running and we just donate and try a little bit more like those clinical trials, it's not only going to help spinal cord injuries, it's going to help so many other things.
Right.
But I think if we'll probably see something crazy in the next couple of years.
I hope so, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's and they actually fund over 30 across Canada and 8 in Quebec through McGill University. So that's like pretty close to home too. So
mm-hmm.
Again, like great event. It's really nice to see. A lot of people came out last year, so we're trying to build on that. It's on Sunday, May 5th. Starting at 7 a.m. And in Montreal, we'll be running around the old port, which is really beautiful. And hopefully the weather cooperates and everybody's going to have their phones and their apps and trying to run away from this virtual car that's trying to run us over, essentially.
Or it might be me. I'll be running you guys.
Yeah, exactly. Where can people find out more about you and your progress? And I know you got the Ben Squad hashtag which I got to check out.
We just did a website called bensquad.org, and I'm supposed to do more updates. I'm trying. I'm just having so many things right now.
Of course.
But I'm working on this documentary. I'm trying to make more videos and trying to make videos that are going to help, like, not only inspire anybody who wants to get better, but mostly people that are in wheelchairs, try to show them, like, hey, there's so many much more things you can do. Like, there's those hand bikes. There's so many things that can help your condition get better. It's not only just to get a chair to go to the grocery store. It's actually like doing stuff that are going to help you physically and that are going to help your independence. Because there's so much technology nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's an injury that's been happening forever, but nowadays it's much easier with technology to be able to actually do what you want. Like, I was filming before my accident and now like my fingers don't work and I can still control a camera and I can still film and edit. And like, there's a lot of things that when I was in the hospital a year ago, I would tell them and they'd be like, oh, nobody's done this. Like, there's no way it's going to happen. But like, I'm not a Superman. And it works. So yeah. If I've done it, anybody can do it.
I saw your videos too. They're pretty impressive. The ones that you rigged up your wheelchair.
The wheelchair.
Like, it's pretty cool. Yeah, what you're able to do. Like, you're right. There's no reason why that should limit you. You know, it's really nice what you've done, and to show that, you know, you can continue to follow your passion and your dreams and educate people on the cause and kind of inspire others that way too. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's definitely a lot of limits, but like, it's changing every week. Like, there's always something else coming out and there's always going to be a new way to control your camera or your wheelchair or your fridge or whatever. Like,
mm-hmm.
Nowadays there's robots that can wash your dishes. So what is it going to be like?
That's it. So well, yeah, we'll follow along. I'll definitely see you on May 5th, which is mm-hmm. which is going to be great for the Wings for Life World Run, and we'll put the links in the show notes and follow the hashtag Team Coast to Coast, Ben Squad as well, to kind of follow along with your progress. And Ben, like, your story is just like incredible. Like, I was really thrilled that I would get a chance to meet you and talk to you about it. And you definitely have the right mindset to kind of to move forward with this, and I'm sure that one day we're gonna see you do everything that you want to be doing. So thanks again for coming in today.
Well, thanks. Hopefully one day I'll be running this with you.
Yeah, exactly. I hope so too. Talk to you soon.
Thanks.
This episode is brought to you by the Outrun Retreat, the perfect combination of running, yoga, and wellness, all rolled into one weekend in the great outdoors. Join them May 30th to June 2nd at a beautiful cottage tucked away in the Eastern Townships. Elite runner Ariane Rabi and her team will guide you every step of the way, helping you set new goals and objectives for 2019. For more information, visit theoutrun.ca. See you out there. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at imarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at The Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it. The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in downtown Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi with assistance by Mark Grimberg. Marketing by Joe Garcia and hosted by me, Justin Pugliese.